This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Homeless youth in Texas are inadequately supported due to a spotty system of programs and resources, according to a new report by Texas Appleseed and Texas Network of Youth Services. The report found that a lack of central authority or single definition of homelessness means that youth can cycle through the welfare system, education system, and juvenile justice system, jumping between being labeled a victim or an offender, eligible for resources in one system but not in the other. What is happening with youth homelessness here in San Antonio and across Texas? What are the many negative outcomes that spring from youth homelessness, and what are some possible solutions? We invite you to call in as we have this conversation. You're invited. The number is 210-614-8980. What do you see on the streets? What have you experienced? 210-614-8980. We're joined by Gabriela McDonald. She is a pro bono and new projects director for Texas Appleseed and co-author of the 2017 report, Young, Alone, and Homeless in the Lone Star State. Also with us is Estela Garza, Senior Coordinator for Family and Support Services at San Antonio ISD. She is nationally recognized for her work with students and families experiencing homelessness. And also with us is Caitlin Underbrink, a Target Populations and Research Project Manager for the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless, also known as SARA. And again, our number is 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. So Gabriela McDonald, co-author of the report, Young, Alone, and Homeless in the Lone Star State. Tell me more about your report.
Yeah, so we decided to undertake this report because Texas Appleseed works on a wide variety of youth issues, including the juvenile justice system, dealing with systems where the school-to-prison pipeline exists. And so we kept seeing this issue of homelessness for young people occur. And so we really wanted to take a look at what some of the barriers were to serving youth and what we could do as an organization that focuses on systemic advocacy, where we could make service providers' jobs easier, homeless liaisons' jobs easier, and anybody else who works with this population, as well as the youth themselves. So we spent some real time talking to more than 100 youth, speaking to service providers, law enforcement, homeless liaisons who work in different school districts throughout the entire state, and asked them what the common issues they saw, what common problems they really wanted to discuss, let the youth kind of vent what the things were that they often saw that weren't being addressed on their side of things. And then we put that together with data and actual additional qualitative data to really explain and really lay out the full just vector of all of the issues that a youth who is young and homeless is dealing with as far as education, juvenile and criminal justice, foster care, health issues, and just overall services, including housing.
So, Gabriela, I know that it must mean many different types of faces of homelessness of youth in Texas, but tell me, trying to paint a picture for me for what you would think would be a typical example.
Well, that's part of the issue. It's typical is not really in existence when you're dealing with young people. But as far as, you know, what we could say is just an example. There's a young person who's living at home. They're having problems with their family. They may be being abused by a parent, maybe being abused by a foster care parent even. And so they run away to get away from that system. They don't want to be picked up because if they've been in foster care before, they feel like they're going to end up in that same situation before. And if they have friends who have been in foster care, they've heard of those stories of people who have had bad experiences. So they don't want to be picked up. They don't want to live in shelters because being 16 or 17 in an adult shelter really exposes a youth to a lot of different issues, including human trafficking issues, prostitution, and just survival, street survival tactics. And so they will often go from friend's couch to friend's couch, or, you know, they'll live on the street a little bit. They will find a service provider that can help them temporarily, and then they'll move on. So it's a very transient population. It's a very resourceful population. And so it's a difficult population to look at because of the fact that they are so transient and they are so traditionally hidden.
And what are the numbers? I mean, how big of a problem are we talking about?
That's, again, another problem that's really, really hard to pinpoint. The Texas Education Agency estimates that for the 2014-2015 school year, they had about 113,000 youth that have experienced homelessness at some time during that school year. Voices of Youth Count, which is put out by Chapin Hall of the University of Chicago, released a report the same day we did, and they found that 1 in 10 18 to 25-year-olds experienced homelessness at some point during a 12-month period, and 1 in 30 13 to 17-year-olds. So what those numbers translate to Texas, remember I said TEA had the numbers of about 113,000. If we look at the numbers that Chapin Hall has pulled based on their research at looking at 22 communities across the nation, what they've, including Austin, by the way, what they found is 294,353 youth between 18 and 25 would have experienced homelessness at some point in time in Texas. And then for the 13 to 17-year-old age group, that number is 62,351.
So are you saying that Texas is grossly undercounting the number of youth homeless that we have here?
I think not only is Texas grossly undercounting it, I think this is a nationwide problem. It's not a Texas-specific problem, just because the population is so hidden and they try to avoid being picked up for a wide variety of reasons.
Estella Garza at SAISD, what kind of homelessness do you see?
All kinds, from infancy through 25 years old. We normally will have our grade levels are pre-K to 12, 3-year-olds through 22, 23-year-old kids. But we do see a lot of populations out there as we work with our families. That includes the infancy and includes older kids also. There's just a lot of kids. And just like Graciela had indicated, even with the population of families, you do have families that do not want to be identified as eligible for homelessness services. One of the things that we're trying to get away from in SAISD is not using the word homeless, because when you use that word, you have a picture that is not exactly very complimentary of a person. And so consequently, we're using the name of the law, McKinney-Vento, to be able to identify eligibility. And families seem to take the idea of McKinney-Vento eligibility a lot softer and then identifying them as homeless. So the population is there. We do have a large number of families that we do identify, but we too are under identifying our families in SCIC, and we're really trying hard to do a better job of doing that.
So McKinney-Vento, that's, yes. We say, are you McKinney-Vento eligible?
Correct.
And what does that mean?
McKinney-Vento is part of the new, part of ESSA, and it's been around since NCLB, No Child Left Behind, in 2001. Now it's called ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and this is a federal law that supports how school districts are provide services. Part of the law is the McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Act. And in this particular act, it identifies rights and responsibilities of a school district in working with and educating children that are in homeless situations. Okay. And so that's why we use the term McKinney-Vento instead.
Okay, but we want to get to, we have to talk about these terms. This is how you deal with it, but also we want to talk about what's happening on the streets and why that's okay. Important. And we're going to try and see if we can get some stories from our callers. The number is 210-614-8980. Youth homelessness, it's more common than you think. Many people experience it temporarily and then maybe as a chronic condition. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about youth homelessness, and you're invited into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. So far, we've learned that Texas and the nation is vastly undercounting youth homelessness, and that we have to come up with better definitions, better categories, and better ways to provide services to this vulnerable population. And Will has called in. Let's get him on the air. Hey, Will, welcome to the radio. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. One of the things I want to approach is, you know, we always call people that are 23, 26 kids. They're not kids. They're grown adults. You know, and they're listed as children. And you know, I do care about children, but once you get 18 years old, you know, you have the obligation to at least attempt to support yourself. As far as people who don't want to be listed as homeless, I can understand that. There is a stigmatism, but if you're homeless, I would think that you're living under a bridge somewhere and probably don't want to be in a home somewhere.
Okay, Will, I appreciate your call, and I think you bring up some great points. You're articulating what a lot of people are thinking as well. So let's get to some of these points. So Caitlin Underbrink, you're with the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless, Sarah. So what about Will's first point that once you're hit 18, you shouldn't be thought of as youth homeless anymore?
So we work with the HUD definition of homelessness, and with that, it's 18 to 24 is what counts as homelessness for our purposes. So we work with unaccompanied youth. A lot of times when they enter these services, a lot of them get kicked out of their homes at a very young age, anywhere, you know, from 16 to a little bit later on. So they don't have that support system. A lot of them are LGBTQ youth is what we've interacted with in our times talking to certain agencies such as Stand Up for Kids and that kind of thing. So they've never really had a support system, and they've never really had that kind of parenting role a lot of times. So, and when you talk about the youth who are, living under bridges and there are a lot of youth that are living under bridges and living in abandoned houses and
living in cars
and living in cars as well. There's a very large population actually at some of the schools around here where they're living in cars and such as SAC and that kind of thing. And they're just wanting to go to school and they don't want to rack up that debt that comes with getting housing. So there's so many things working against them with criminal records and drug addiction, and they're more vulnerable to human trafficking than, you know, say older populations. So there are a lot of things working against them that kind of prevent them from moving forward with seeking out services.
Gabriela McDonald from the project director for Texas Appleseed. What about Will's comments?
Yeah, it's a common question that we hear. And as far as being 18 to 24 and being an adult, when there's an 18-year-old and they go off to college, you no longer expect that 18-year-old not to get through college without assistance from a parent. Oftentimes, parents give advice that even just going home to do laundry is a support, area that a lot of these young individuals who are homeless or experiencing homelessness don't have. And that's a very big portion of your life that you can't depend on one single adult in your life to really push things forward. So it's not that they're not capable, because they are very resourceful and are surviving in really, really strenuous circumstances. The idea that an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old is more like a 30-year-old than a 17-year-old is one of those things that we really need to appreciate. Just in brain science, we know that up to the age about 24, 25 is when people really start to mature. And that doesn't happen for 19 or 20-year-olds for the most part, unless, and a lot of these youth are having that experience in college. A lot of youth who aren't experiencing homelessness are having these experiences in college and, you know, getting jobs where they're still living at home with their parents. So they have support, but these youth don't. Additionally, as far as wanting to live underneath a bridge or not wanting to find housing, when we interviewed more than 100 youth throughout the state of Texas, when we asked them, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Undoubtedly, every time, with an apartment, with a stable job, being a vet, being a nurse, something along those lines. So it's something that they do have aspirations to make sure they're successful. And, you know, a lot of them are even sleeping in tents behind their schools just to make sure that they can get to school and get the education they know they need to survive as adults in this society.
So, Gabriela, you did these interviews. How did you find these individuals, these homeless youth, and how did that go?
We actually, working with the Texas Network of Youth Services, TNOYS, they have a lot of connections with a lot of the service providers throughout the state. And so whether the service provider was a supported independent living situation or a situation where somebody was just going to a drop-in center to get temporary services, we were able to talk to youth and connect to youth through those service providers. And that's how we talked to them. We talked to them through LifeWorks in Austin, through the Roy Mass Center in San Antonio, and Houston, and Dallas and similar areas, in Plano and other places as well.
So there are a lot of students who are trying to go to school, and school is a point of contact where you can start providing services and maybe turn some people's lives around for the better. And so Estella Garza at SAISD, is that what you're looking at?
Yes, we do see that a lot of kids do want to come to school. It's a focal point. Everybody's at school. The friends, people that I know are at school, and so I want to be in school too. And considering that, then, as I indicated earlier, McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Act helped us to be able to bring these kids into school expeditiously without some of the common documentation that is required of school districts. And so we can bring them in relatively quickly and get them on target. We work with them to help support their continuous attendance, their continuous participation in the classroom and things like that. So
when I know that in order to get many services, you have to have a legal ID. Do kids have, you know, who are suffering through homelessness, do they have access to those documents, Caitlin?
No, so we have actually found when I talked to the Thrive Youth Center that most of the youth who are living on the streets do not have any sort of identification. This prevents them from getting jobs. It prevents them from getting into several shelters, so they can't even begin to access services if they want to. And then there's the additional cost of just trying to get the ID, trying to navigate getting the ID.
So it's not like they ever had a driver's license. They never had a driver's license. They never had a legal ID.
No.
And trying to establish those things nowadays, that's hard. They maybe never even had a social security number.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when youth run away from their homes, they don't leave with those documents. So they never have them when they're even leaving.
Okay, so how do you fix that?
So we actually have a program in San Antonio with the San Antonio Police Department and Stand Up for Kids. So the police will, you know, they dress in like layman's clothes and they go out and they actually provide, they fast track IDs for persons experiencing homelessness. So we have that team and they go out and they interact with a lot of youth and they can actually fast track that service for the youth.
I've talked to those officers and they're very dedicated, and they tell me that like on Tuesdays they go out and they spend like the whole day trying to get several people their identification papers, and they say if we can get three of them done, that's a huge success. But they spend the whole day at the records, at the county records, trying to get birth certificates. It's not that easy. And trying to work the system, there's a lot of obstacles. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. So how is there a way we could make that easier or find something? What do you think, Gabriella?
Sometimes it requires legislative change. There have been efforts at the legislature to make it easier for foster youth to get IDs. And, you know, like we've mentioned in our report, foster youth are unfortunately often intersect with youth who eventually become homeless. So making sure that those youth have access to IDs, making sure that we are speaking with those who have the authority at local Department of Transportation offices, that they know what the challenges are and how to help youth navigate those systems. We also have a homeless youth handbook that really kind of lays out what the process is for getting your birth certificate, for getting your ID, so that youth who aren't ever connected to services have some sort of online resource they can go to that directs them with what they need to do and what at least the steps are and where maybe some of the resources are to be able to help them do that.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes when the youth gets all those, finally starts getting things together, they got their documents together, they're starting to get services, things starting to, then they may have an episodic condition where, things don't work out for them. Maybe they're dealing with some chemical dependency issues, maybe they have a psychotic break or something, and then suddenly they lose everything all over again. I just wonder, how do they do it? How do they pick themselves back up and keep on going, Estella? What do you think?
That's the challenge. In working with kids, we really try when we do have the opportunity to speak with them and work with them, we really try hard to be able to establish some kind of self-resiliency in order to keep them going, letting them know that if those kinds of things should happen, letting them know that this is a number they can always call and get assistance, and that's the number to our offices. And so it's just really, really trying hard to work with this multifaceted issue of youth homelessness to be able to better help guide them and keep them going some way, somehow.
I've got a question from Norma, and she says, how is the ecosystem of resources for the homeless in San Antonio connected? Do different organizations provide different services, and do y'all communicate together? So Caitlin?
Yeah, so we actually have the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless has a system called Coordinated Entry. It's a process developed to ensure that all people experiencing a housing crisis have fair and equal access. So we have points around town that actually people can go and they can get assessed for housing resources. And right now we're actually in the process of developing something like this for youth specific resources. So it's pretty much a fancy referral system. What we do is a youth will come in, they take an assessment to test their vulnerability, and then we place them in the appropriate program, and the computer pretty much does it all. And it's able to see which programs have openings and which programs are best suited for their needs.
And you wanted to add to that?
Yes. Not only does the Sarah have the coordinated access, there's also different organizations or collaboratives out there in the community that are working very specifically targeting youth homelessness. You have Sarah has the Youth Homeless Task Force, where we get together and interact with each other to best support each other, given the idea that she works with a HUD definition of homelessness, and I work with the U.S. Department of Ed definition of homelessness that has some differences. But we're trying to come together to be able to support each other and work together to support the youth, some way, fashion, or form. There's also other kinds of collaboratives out there that are focusing on youth in the workforce, youth in, say, that are being sex trafficked, youth that are also coming from the aspect of foster care. So there's different collaboratives out there, and when you start to look at it, we all start seeing each other in the same kinds of meetings, because we're all working with youth. And so there's a very strong network in the community where we're really trying hard to work together and support each other to be able to identify the youth appropriately, as well as address the areas of services that are void. What do we need more of in the community, housing, or do we need jobs for youth? So we're looking at all of these kinds of things from a more macro level to support the youth wherever they should come from in the city of San Antonio, city and Bexar County.
So shouldn't, like, you approach someone, maybe they're homeless, you want to stabilize their situation. There's organizations like the SAM Shelter, other places they could go, and then from there you try to build up?
We try to build up from wherever we can, from wherever the student is, wherever the child is. Sometimes they're not ready to go to a shelter. Many shelters here are not really youth-oriented. You mentioned SAM. There's Haven for Hope. There's Strong Foundation. There is Salvation Army. You know, there's several shelters in the city. Addressing the needs of a family unit, addressing the needs of the parents in the family unit. So they're catering more to the adult population. And to put an 18 or 19-year-old in a setting like that by themselves is somewhat frightful for them.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the areas that really address the issue of youth homelessness, such as Thrive, the Roy Maas, St. PJ's, George Gervin. So there's other areas that
we look
at.
You have these individuals, they don't want to go to those places.
Right. Some kids love the street.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we're going to talk more about that when we come back, talk about homelessness related to the foster care system, the criminal justice system, and trafficking. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Youth homelessness, youth in the streets. They still go to school and they still have dreams. But what can we do for them? How do we provide services? How do we avoid these negative outcomes? How do we find solutions? Give us a call. Were you homeless ever, you know, as a teen? Were you a runaway? How did you turn it around? What have you seen out on the streets? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So, Caitlin Underbrink, you're with the San Antonio of the South, sorry, I keep saying San Antonio, South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless, SARA, and you're seeing a lot of how half of the youth homeless on the streets, they're transgender?
So when talking to Thrive Youth Center and then also Stand Up for Kids, about 50% of the youth that they see are LGBTQ. So a lot of them are transgender youth. So this is a pretty big issue. And I was talking to Sandy at Thrive the other day, and she said around 95% of the youth who arrive at Thrive Youth Center is because of their LGBTQ status, and they were kicked out of their home because of cultural differences with their parents.
So is having that LGBTQ happening with them, does that make them particularly vulnerable?
So yes, because a lot of times they leave their home at a young age. So it could be, 16, and then they're on the streets for a while. It also sometimes will make them more susceptible to predatory for sex trafficking, that kind of thing. People tend to try and, persuade them to get into prostitution or drugs or that kind of thing and pull them into that arena.
Gabriella McDonald over with the Texas Appleseed, co-author of the 2017 report, Young, Alone, and Homeless in the Lone Star State. There's a lot of interaction between those who are homeless and law enforcement. How well briefed is law enforcement on this population?
It really depends on the area you're in. I know that lady from San Antonio ISD stated that Estella Garza, thank you, excuse me, that Estella Garza mentioned that they have local law enforcement who really kind of help go out there. And you mentioned as well those who help get IDs. In Houston, for example, and Austin, they both have what are called HOST or HOT departments in their law enforcement divisions that are homeless outreach street teams or homeless outreach teams. And when those officers are involved in those, they're specially trained to deal with the population. And we hear really, really wonderful things about the way that law enforcement and youth interact, but that's not always the case. And throughout the state, it varies depending on the jurisdiction, whether a youth is a runaway or whether a youth has been picked up for some other survival behavior, whether that be prostitution or something else. Oftentimes, youth are still being criminalized for those things. And we want to make sure that they get the necessary services so that they are removed from those situations and not necessarily, forced back into the streets and out on the streets by having a juvenile criminal record off of that offense.
But Estella Garza, as you interact with homeless youth at the San Antonio ISD, you're the coordinator for family and support services there. Do the youth see law enforcement as someone who can help them or someone who could not help them?
They'll see them in both ways. Okay. Some of the youth do have positive relationships with them, and some of them don't. When you're in school, a big issue is attendance. And with attendance, if the kids don't come to school, it used to be that the kids were taken to court. Parents were given fines. So it was somewhat the beginning of the criminalization of youth. With most recently, I think two legislative sessions ago, it was passed that if you have a child that is eligible as far as homelessness is concerned, that it wasn't to take them to court because of non-attendance, because of their homelessness situation. It wasn't right to do that. So now the law has kind of done a turnaround with regards to taking kids that are in homeless situations to court. So now we're flipping the other way, and it's trying to see, okay, which way is this going as far as the legal system and youth? It's a little bit more favorable for them, and I think that is helping to be able to allow that connection with some of the legal stuff that comes into play.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines, 210-614-8980. And Chanel is on the line. Chanel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, basically just like wanted to, you know, give a little bit of my background for those who are listening, you know, who are probably going through the same stuff that I've been going through. I've been pretty much homeless for about 8 years, going on almost 9 now. Pretty much just struggled with a lot here where I'm at my location. Just trying to find my next meal is really hard sometimes. You know, being out on the streets, it's not easy, especially during the winter here. You know, there's days that, you know, I'm worried about whether or not my stuff's going to go missing where I'm at, or, you know, somebody's going to come up to me, you know, keep harassing me and stuff like that. Been through a lot of sexual harassment out in the streets as well. Just pretty much, I'm just trying to deal with it, ignoring it, you know, just pretty much just handling life and just trying to move forward.
So Chanel, based on your experiences and what you've seen, how can people provide services that you could use?
You know, it'd be real helpful because there's a lot of the homeless youth that I know that I've gone to know as well over the years have been LGBT. And, you know, for us, it's hard, just as hard as for anybody else that's out there on the streets as well. You know, we're just trying to survive just like everybody else. You know, it'd be nice if there were more people that would be out here that would be more LGBT friendly as well, you know, that can help us out with any little thing.
And so what was the biggest misconception that people have about you and your situation?
That because of my lifestyle that I got kicked out, you know, basically they think I'm homeless because of my lifestyle. No, I actually ran away from home. When I was 17, I actually ran away from home and I came over to Texas.
Why did you come here?
I came over here because it was about, I want to say 17 years since I seen my mother. And she was here at the time, so I came over here and things didn't work out with her either. So I moved around Texas quite a bit with a few friends. And that's where I ended up here in San Antonio.
So what keeps you going, Chanel?
Pretty much just me to push myself forward and continue and prove to myself that I can't get on my own. You know, every now and then some people do need help as much as their pride won't allow them to ask for help. But me, I know there's this limit that I push myself to where I tell myself I can't do this. I actually need help. And I'll actually go and look for people to help, see if I have any resources available that is willing to help me out. And if they are, I can pass that information on to other people that might be able to use it or give that information to somebody else that they know.
How old are you?
I am now 25.
What are you doing for healthcare?
I'm not really worried about health that much. For healthcare wise,
you just play it day by day?
I just go through it day by day. That's it, day by day, and just go through it.
Well, Chanel, good luck to you. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate everything you telling us about your story. All right. Caitlin Underbrink, this is a population that you work with the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless. What do you think of Chanel's story?
I mean, I think it's really interesting. I think I actually remember in talking to Chanel at one point. But Thrive Youth Center is one of the only LGBTQ-specific shelters in San Antonio and in Texas. And so a lot of times, Sandy has told me that she'll get calls from people in Louisiana, people in all over the U.S. trying to get into her shelter, which only has a limited space. So thinking that, you know, her comment about we need more LGBTQ-friendly places to go in our community is so true. There's only really one that we know of that actually provides shelter and housing. So if we could expand those resources, that would be something that we could really do for these youth.
What is it that a facility that is tailored to LGBTQ, what is it that they can provide that no one else can provide? Why is that different?
So there's a lot of sensitivity training that has to happen. So there's different terms, there's different, you know, when people are transitioning, there's certain types of, you know, hormone therapies that you have to be aware of. You have to know those resources. And then just also being sensitive to, you know, their specific situation, whether they were kicked out, the family reunification piece is big. And so just being sensitive to that, not being in a judgment-free zone, is something that's really important.
And it's a sense that you can come here and you're not an outsider, you're not ostracized, this is a space for you?
Yes.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take another break. We'll come back, we'll take a call from Mickey. Mickey, hang on, we'll get you right after this 1 minute break. Phone lines are also open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about youth homelessness, trying to identify what are the real concerns, what kind of services are out there, how can we connect those services with the people who need them, how do we understand what's happening on the streets and get these organizations to talking to each other. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about youth homelessness, and Mickey has been holding, and let's get Mickey on the air. Hey, Mickey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I guess I have experience as well of being homeless. But my experience, I've only been homeless for like probably going on six years. And I don't know, when I was homeless, though, I'd like prostitute. I was like kind of thrown into being inside prostitution or whatever to like come up with food and come up with money for food and to clothe myself and to house myself. Hello?
Yes. And yeah, we have a spotty connection, but yes.
I don't know. For the, like, in the 6 years of me being, you know, homeless or whatever, was very, very,
okay.
It was complicated.
Okay, Mickey, and we're working on clearing up your connection a little bit. From what I understand, you told me that you've been homeless for 6 years and that you've been trafficked, forced into prostitution as a way to make money to pay for your room and board. Is that and meals and things? Is that right? Okay, looks like we've lost the connection. Okay, so Estella Garza, hearing this story here, I mean, this is not an uncommon story.
No, it's not. Hunger is very much alive in the community, anywhere you go. And for this population of homeless youth, it gets to be even more of a challenge as to where do I go to get a meal. They are sometimes not enrolled in school districts where they can get free meals in San Antonio ISD and in a lot of our local neighboring school districts in Bexar County. And so where do they eat is difficult. So we're looking at resources in the community to be able to support their meals. And if there isn't a source, then they need to make, like, we've all indicated, including Gabriela, these population of kids are very, very resourceful. They're going to find means to be able to access what they need, shelter over their heads as well as meals.
But there are people out there who are willing to exploit that. Gabriela McDonald, can you talk about that?
There are people who are willing to exploit that, and that's part of the reason the population is so hidden. You know, when we talked to a lot of these youth, some of them mentioned that, you know, predators would actually sit near some of the service providers, not, you know, where the service providers could find them, but they knew where the service providers were to prey on this young population, because they know even if you're going into a drop-in center, you're just looking for help. And so if you have somebody who says to you, I can give you a house, I can give you food, I can make sure you get a car, that sounds really, really promising to a 17 or 18-year-old that's got very little at the time, but you know, it can fast become something that is just not viable for the youth. But youth don't always necessarily know that, and then they get trapped, and then law enforcement will pick them up for those survival behaviors. And if they're 17, they're going to be tried as adults. They're not going to be treated as the youth that they are.
And do they also get, you know, steered into CPS if they're under 17? Because a lot of times it's not 17, it's something that's 14, 15, maybe even younger.
This is correct. This is the other reason that youth often avoid service providers, because homeless liaisons, service providers often do have a requirement that they either, when a youth who comes in and they're under 16 comes to them and is looking for help, they will be, you know, they have about 24 hours before they're required to call a parent or CPS, or if neither of those is responsive, law enforcement. And so that requirement often does lead to youth ending up in foster care. And that's something that a lot of the youth, again, try to avoid just because of stories that they have themselves being in foster care situations, or that they have from their friends and others that they've spoken to.
And here's a caller. John is on the line. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Well, first off, thank you for having this conversation. It's so important. And thank you to the panelists for all the wonderful services that you provide in our city. I work with youth and often homeless youth. So I'm familiar with a lot of the services that are being provided. But my concern is that and I think in San Antonio we do a wonderful job of providing these services relative to other communities, but my concern is that a lot of times when we talk about providing services to homeless and youth, we're talking about the reaction to homelessness and the first aid that is necessary after the fact. And I think we still haven't, as a community, become proactive and serious about addressing homelessness in order to prevent it. There are models that have been proven effective, things like Housing First. We have shown that we can address the issue with our homeless veterans. When are we going to be serious about addressing those issues with youth and the general population? Because I believe those solutions are out there. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
All right, John, thank you for that call. And as he's these questions that he brings up and issues he brings up, I'm also wondering about how the opioid epidemic that is cutting through San Antonio and all communities in America, how that just adds another layer of complication for parents who are dealing with addiction and they relinquish their responsibilities, and also how addiction is hurting our homeless youth population as well. So, Gabriella McDonald, are you looking at that? Have you seen that?
We haven't talked much about the opioid crisis, but generally drug abuse and substance abuse are things that lead to youth homelessness, not necessarily because the youth is abusing drugs, but because the parent is. And as you say, there's an abdication of the parent's responsibility sometimes. But we are looking at prevention and early intervention, because Texas does have a wide variety of programs that do help families stay together. Youth are not homeless often because of the fact that they can't afford an apartment. It's true often that they probably can't afford an apartment, but they're often homeless because something has broken down in the home. And if we can make sure that services and that families know that all of these services are out there, and that legislators and local municipalities provide the funding, and federal government organizations provide the funding necessary to make sure that these programs are working at capacity and working past capacity, it's something that we really want to make sure is happening. So when thinking about youth who are running away, if a youth has run away, obviously something is wrong. So we want to be able to provide that family with the necessary resources to make sure that the reason the youth is running away doesn't persist. So those are the types of things we really want to suggest, and that we put out in our report that we really need to start talking about more. There are services. STAR is an example of a program that is something that's available for any youth, not just foster youth, that they can reach out to that program and get some assistance. But if families don't know about those programs, there's no way for them to get that help. And that help is essential to prevent and provide early intervention for youth who are at risk of homelessness.
And Estella Garza, some people say, well, if this problem is so bad, how come I don't see it? It's not out on the streets. But when you see it, when you finally learn to, the scales fall from your eyes, you see it everywhere. I mean, that's my experience. Is that what you think?
Very much so. You need to know what you're looking for, okay? Can't see the forest for the trees kind of thing. Youth homelessness is just around the corner from where you live, from where you work. Sometimes you can see a young lady in her late teens, early 20s, walking around with an older man, and it looks perfectly harmless, but that certainly can also be a gentleman, a pimp who is prostituting the young lady. And so there's lots of different things that you do see that you can't recognize it to be homelessness, but they are. They're in front of your eyes. You just need to understand more about the issue of youth homelessness, understand some of the characteristics of it, and what to look for, and you'll see it everywhere you go, unfortunately.
But it's not just on the streets, Caitlin, it's also online.
Yes. So I was talking to our youth work group who informed me that there are a lot of kids posting their profiles on Backpage, on Craigslist, and advertising themselves for this. A lot of it does have to do with the human trafficking piece. It has to do with getting manipulated into the system by someone who they call their, you know, their boyfriend or their daddy or that kind of thing. And they get pulled into the system. And, you know, I was talking to someone the other day who said that they went to a store where there was this young girl trying on clothes, and there was this a lot older man there, and he was just nodding and watching her try on clothes, and they were just, you know, she was probably 17, 18, not really dressed appropriately for the weather, and the guy was just nodding as she ran in and out of the dressing room.
Okay, creepy.
And those are just, you know, those, and if she would have known that was one of the signs of human trafficking, maybe something could be done about it.
And so, Gabriella McDonald, what about trying to firm up the definition of youth homelessness?
We would love to have a very broad definition of youth homelessness. The McKinney-Vento definition that we discussed earlier is something that we really would like to advocate for, because it does include that branch of youth who are couch surfing and always at risk of actually living on the street. We need to make sure that that all of the different systems that are serving this population are working off of one definition, because funding really is affected by that definition. If a service provider is, you know, serving youth between the ages of 18 and 20, and all of a sudden their funding source that provides for 18 to 20-year-olds pulls their funding, they may not be able to serve those 18 and 20-year-olds anymore and may be relegated back to 18 and under, or however they're formulated. So we need to make sure that there is a definition in play that really makes sure service providers and all of their different funding sources are able to be used in a way that allows what was discussed earlier, that coordination between systems, so that these youth are actually fully and fairly served. Because we do need the juvenile justice system and the education system and the foster care system and health system to all be able to work together to adequately serve this young population. And they can't do that if they're all operating off of all of the different definitions and have different funding sources that only provide for certain segments of this population.
Gabriella McDonald is the co-author of the 2017 report, Young, Alone, and Homeless in the Lone Star State, from Texas Appleseed, joined by Estella Garza. She's with SAISD, the Senior Coordinator for Family and Support Services. Also with us this afternoon is Caitlin Underbrink. She's with SARA, the South Alamo Regional Alliance for the Homeless. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.